Good evening. In the news today, corruption in the bail bond industry impacting low-income communities in New York City.
New Yorkers who are paying for bondsmen are doing so instead of paying rent or utilities or fixing the car that they rely on to get to work.
The hearing for an NYPD officer who killed Delron Small.
If any of us had done what I just had did, we would have been locked up. We would have been in handcuffs the night of the scene.
And a new lawsuit against Donald Trump for violating the emoluments clauses of the Constitution of the United States. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Wednesday, June 14, 2017. Police presence has been raised in New York City following an attack today on Republican lawmakers at a congressional baseball practice. House GOP Whip Steve Scalise of Louisiana and several others were wounded. Other Congress members and aides dove for cover. The shooter had a lot of ammo with him. He fought a gun battle with police and later died. Scalise dragged himself off the infield, leaving a trail of blood as colleagues rushed to his assistance. 66-year-old James Hodgkin was the shooter, a home inspector from Illinois who had several minor run-ins with the law in recent years. He belonged to a Facebook group called Terminate the Republican Party, and he railed against the inequality he saw across the country. Shortly after the shooting, Bernie Sanders made this statement on the Senate floor.
Madam President, I have just been informed that the alleged shooter at the Republican baseball practice this morning is someone who apparently volunteered on my presidential campaign. I am sickened by this despicable act, and let me be as clear as I can be. Violence of any kind is unacceptable in our society, and I condemn this action in the strongest possible terms. Real change can only come about through nonviolent action, and anything else runs counter to our most deeply held American values. I know I speak for the entire country in saying that my hopes and prayers are that Representative Scalise, congressional staff, and the Capitol police officers who were wounded make a quick and full recovery. I also want to thank the Capitol Police for their heroic actions to prevent further harm. Thank you, Madam President.
The shocking event left the Capitol horrified and stunned. The House canceled proceedings for the day. Speaker Paul Ryan of Wisconsin and Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi of California both spoke on the floor, issuing calls for unity. Ryan said, "An attack on one of us is an attack on all of us." In other news, following a lawsuit filed this week against Donald Trump by the Attorneys General of Maryland and the District of Columbia for violations of the emoluments clauses of the Constitution, congressional Democrats filed suit against Trump. Their suit also alleges that Trump is violating the emoluments clauses of the Constitution. Almost 200 senators and representatives are plaintiffs in the lawsuit. It was filed in the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia this morning. They have standing to sue, according to Connecticut Senator Blumenthal, because the Constitution's Foreign Emoluments Clause requires the president to obtain the consent of Congress before accepting any gifts. Although Trump turned over control of his real estate development, management, and marketing company to his adult sons and a senior executive, he didn't divest from it, and his sons are still reporting to him about their dealings. Trump stands to benefit financially from the Trump Organization's profits, including from foreign governments. Democrats are asking their Republican colleagues to join in the suit. Turning to Flint, Michigan, five people, including the head of Michigan's health department, were charged today with involuntary manslaughter in an investigation of Flint's lead-contaminated water. They were all blamed in the death of an 85-year-old man who had Legionnaire's disease. Nick Lyon is the highest-ranking member of Republican Governor Rick Snyder's administration to be snagged in this criminal investigation. The investigation into how Flint's water system became poisoned after officials tapped the Flint River in 2014. 48-year-old Lyon is the director of Health and Human Services. He's accused of failing to alert the majority black population about an outbreak of Legionnaires' disease in the Flint area, which had been linked by some experts to poor water quality in 2014 and 2015. If convicted, he could face up to 15 years in prison. The Michigan Attorney General said his probe is moving to the trial phase, but he signaled that Michigan's governor, who has apologized for his administration's failure that led to and prolonged the crisis, may not be charged. Flint used the Flint River for 18 months. The water wasn't properly treated, and it caused lead to leach from old pipes. Some experts have blamed the water for the Legionnaires' disease outbreak. Turning to local news, the NYPD says it changed how it handled low-level offenses such as drinking in public, littering, spitting, violating park rules, and public urination with civil rather than criminal summonses. It says this will reduce the number of criminal summonses by about 100,000. Meanwhile, the bail system in New York City continues to impact families. A new report issued today by the Brooklyn Community Bail Fund outlines a broken, unregulated bail system. It impacts mostly low-income New Yorkers. The report finds a number of violations: unlicensed bail bond companies, some with fictitious trade names, some licensed bail bond companies doing business in unregistered locations, and many instances of consumers being misled and fleeced. What the commercial bond industry is doing is siphoning money into private industry, making the financial divide in hardest-hit communities more pronounced. This according to Peter Goldberg. He's executive director of the Brooklyn Community Bail Fund. He says roughly 45,000 New York City men and women will be placed in jail this year because they can't afford bail.
ACLU and Color of Change just released a great report about this industry nationwide. It's an industry that writes around $14 billion of bonds a year. It's an industry that profits on the backs of low-income individuals at around $2 billion a year. So they have every incentive, obviously, to push back on allowing people to be free pre-trial.
Bail businesses provide services in New York State and routinely defraud the most vulnerable consumers.
Nisone Cheftel Gomes is supervising attorney at the Community Development Project of the Urban Justice Center. She says the predatory bail bond industry and its deceptive and misleading practices are classic consumer fraud operating in the criminal justice system.
By charging illegal fees, creating purposeful delays in bailing people out of jail, not returning collateral, and the arbitrary rearrest of people for contract infractions, yet no one is holding them accountable. Predatory bail lending targets low-income communities of color, much like other predatory industries, and drains these communities of money needed. New Yorkers who are paying for bondsmen are doing so instead of paying rent or utilities or fixing the car that they rely on to get to work. Income disparity is at an all-time high in New York. The top 1% earned 45 times more than the bottom 99. That's the greatest disparity of any state in the U.S. New Yorkers cannot afford to be fleeced by bail bondsmen.
Cheftel Gomes says New Yorkers need to be protected from predatory bail bondsmen and women. The Lipman Commission report on reducing incarceration and revisioning the city's criminal justice system found that of those who had to make bail in 2016, almost 9 in 10, that's 89%, couldn't make bail at arraignment. If a person can't make bail, he or she remains in pretrial detention, most likely at Rikers. While there are 9 different types of bail, cash bail, which requires all money to be paid up front, and insurance company bond, which requires 10% of the bond amount to be deposited as collateral with a bail bond company, these are the 2 forms usually used. Goldberg wants to see an end to cash bail.
Cash bail punishes and imprisons people simply because they're poor. So nearly 80% of the folks on Rikers are presumptively innocent, and they're sitting there just because they can't afford to buy their own freedom. And cash bail will always punish poor people. So even if bail is set an amount that someone can afford, they'll be handing over money to the courts or to for-profit actors instead of putting food on the table or paying this month's rent.
So what do you want to see instead of cash bail?
For many people, they should be simply released on their own recognizance, right? Our results at the Brooklyn Community Bail Fund, we've had 95% of our clients make all of the required court dates, even though they have no skin in the game. This shows that people will come back to court even if you don't ask them for money they don't have. And on the occasion where someone does miss a court date, it's often because they have a child at home who's sick, or they're struggling, or they're living in a shelter. So our focus cannot only be on having every single person come back to court, it also has to be on the tens of thousands of people that we're imprisoning every year for their inability to afford bail.
Cheftel Gomes.
One of the bigger issues as well is that this is a private industry. They make their own rules. They set forth terms in contracts that they may or may not share with individuals that have to sign for these bonds. And so in addition to not knowing their rights, people are not provided the information they need at the outset in order to comply with whatever terms they're being held to.
And are people being fooled when they go to a bail bondsman? Are they being fooled by what they see in front of the store?
So I think one of the issues is that it's not even clear when you go into one of these storefronts. They may or may not have a sign out front that gives the name of the actual business entity. When you go inside, there's no signage, there's no information about who the actual bail bondsman is, bail bond entity, and the people that you might interact with inside often will say they don't have, you know, the right to provide information, or they can't tell you who you need to be in touch with if you have a complaint. So people don't even know where to go when they have been fleeced. They don't know who to complain about.
And what we've in effect done with commercial bail bondsmen is we've outsourced the decision of who is free and who is jailed to for-profit actors. And that is, I think, a disgrace, and it's a practice that needs to end.
And what do you want to see happen?
We want to see the abolition of cash bail. Until that happens, we would like to see the meaningful regulation of the bail bond industry until we also get rid of it entirely.
Nick Malinowski is with Vocal New York.
It's just on like its face very inappropriate for a private industry to enrich itself off of people who are desperate to get out of jail.
And you have gone forward with this report and released it to the governor and to other officials, I take it?
Yeah, to Governor Cuomo, Attorney General Schneiderman, New York State Department of Financial Services, New York City Department of Consumer Affairs, and the Comptroller. Basically, low-income New Yorkers in a moment of crisis are being disadvantaged, and we need the city and the state to step up.
And finally, parents who are trying to get their son or their daughter out, is there any recourse for them apart from going to these bail bonds people?
Well, one thing they can do is they can reach out to organizations like the Community Bail Fund and Urban Justice Center, Vocal. We have a coalition of groups that are working toward not only getting the word out to the regulators, but also providing information. The Community Bail Fund has information that they can provide to community members so that they can understand how the process works.
For more information, go to brooklynbailfund.org. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio. This is WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. It's been a year. July 4th will be 1 year since Delron Small was shot dead in Brooklyn by off-duty NYPD police officer Walter Isaacs. Small's family is still seeking justice. They held a news conference outside Brooklyn Criminal Court after a hearing into the death of Delron Small. Matt Patterson was there and filed this report.
Family and concerned citizens gathered at the Brooklyn Criminal Courthouse for the latest hearing in the Delron Small murder trial. Small was shot 3 times by off-duty cop Walter Isaacs at a traffic light in East New York. Isaacs initially claimed he had fired his gun only after being physically assaulted by Small. Small's family says that surveillance footage shows a different story. The video shows Small being struck by the bullets as soon as he reaches the window of Isaacs' car.
If any of us had done what Isaacs had did, we would have been locked up. we would have been in handcuffs the night of the scene.
Victor Dempsey is Delron Small's younger brother. He says that yesterday's hearing was just one step in a very long road.
We'll be at every court hearing and at the trial until Isaac's is sentenced and imprisoned off the streets.
This case is the first to be tried with New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman acting as a special prosecutor under an executive order signed in 2015. Governor Cuomo explained the intent of that order at that time.
Our goal is build trust again. Where does the breakdown of trust start? A belief that there is a conflict of interest when the current criminal justice system investigates cases about law enforcement.
The order states that Schneiderman will stand as special prosecutor for any cases in which an officer kills an unarmed civilian, or in which a civilian may or may not have been armed and dangerous. The executive order has been invoked 7 times in the 2 years since it was signed, but this is the first investigation to go to trial. Last September, Officer Isaacs was charged with second-degree murder, carrying a possible sentence of 25 years to life. Isaacs pled not guilty. The hearing this week was to determine the admissibility of statements made by Isaacs on the night of the killing. NYPD officers and EMT first responders were among the witnesses who testified. They each testified that they had not pressured Isaacs into saying any of what he said that night. The EMT also testified that she had given Isaacs an ice pack for his jaw, which she said was swollen. Victor Dempsey believes that everything Isaacs reportedly said on the night of the killing should be admissible in the courtroom.
His attorneys were trying to suppress statements that he originally made, trying to state that he was assaulted or struck or whatever you want to call it. And we're not suppressing those statements. We're going to make sure that he's held accountable. Every word that he describes from the very beginning is going to be held accountable throughout this trial.
Mothers of the movement, moms who have lost children to NYPD violence, joined the Small family in the courtroom. Among them, Hawa Ba, mother of Muhammad Ba, Gwen Carr, mother of Eric Garner, and Carol Gray, Kimani Gray's mother. These women were instrumental in getting Governor Cuomo to issue his executive order that created the special prosecutor for cases involving civilian deaths at the hands of the police.
I give a big round of applause and my deepest sympathies to the families previous to us that fought to get the special attorneys, special prosecutor. I know they fought very hard to make that happen, and I'm glad that we have that tool that they provided for us.
Dempsey says the other family's emotional support has been just as critical to his family as the legal support.
We have the full support of the families. They're a rock for us. This is a part of our extended family now. It definitely feels great to be able to call someone at 1:30 in the morning when I'm depressed or I'm feeling, you know, the sorrows of my brother not being here, and to have someone to talk to that can directly relate to that.
For Hawa Ba, it's important to stand up for families who have experienced tragedy as she has.
I'm here today standing to demand justice for his legacy, demand justice for his family. If the NYPD got a gun and uniform, they can believe they can kill anyone and walk away. That's not right. The NYPD should protect the people. We're demanding equal justice to this country to bring peace. No justice, no peace. If it's no justice, it will be no peace in this country.
The judge adjourned yesterday's session without reaching a decision regarding Isaac's statements. A final witness will testify when the hearing continues on September 13th. The trial date is expected to be set for October. Meanwhile, the family and their coalition of supporters are preparing to celebrate Delron Small on the first anniversary of his killing this 4th of July. And this week marks another anniversary, the 5th anniversary of the death of another NYPD victim, Chantel Davis. She was shot and killed while trapped behind the deployed airbag of her vehicle. Her killing occurred before the special prosecutor position was created. Her family says that in all of these 5 years, they haven't heard anything regarding a departmental or criminal investigation. There will be a vigil for Chantel Davis this evening at Mount Zion Church of God on East 37th Street in Brooklyn. Matt Patterson, WBAI News, New York.
The animal. is easy, standing still is hard. Remember all their faces, remember all their voices. Everything is different the second time around.
And We've Got Time, theme song by Regina Spektor for Orange is the New Black, built as a dramedy on Netflix. Season 5 has just premiered. And it's an example that was used on a 2017 Left Forum panel called The Normalization of Evil in the Current Dark Age. The panel at John Jay College of Criminal Justice addresses how media plays a role in normalizing U.S. aggression. Paul Gilman is from Queens. He's with the Gotham Greens.
You know, before 9/11, we still had that American hope, and there was this kind of, you know, Babbitt kind of style, American exceptions, we're the good, we won World War II, even though we didn't, the Soviets won it. You know, we were still looked upon as the good guys. When 9/11 happened, all of a sudden, we switched from being, you know, behind the scenes torturers in Latin America, I'm on the SOA watch, to out and out advocating it publicly with waterboarding. And so how do you normalize this? Let's look at the media. You know, when I was a kid growing up, you know, we had those 50s shows, like, you know, I was born and raised in the 60s. We had like Father Knows Best and everything. We're encouraging the nuclear family. The father would come home. We'd, you know, so switch from one suit and tie to another, you know. All these shows, and I mean, I'm looking at my friends in high school. My friend is saying, when my father came home, he switched into his underwear. So obviously that propaganda didn't work. You know, the only time he saw his father in the suit and tie is at funerals and weddings. You know, then later on in the 60s, you had all these shows reacting to, you know, the radicalization of the 60s, hippies. They spend an inordinate amount of time putting down like tree huggers. That was a big thing in the 70s TV shows. You had shows like Family Ties pushing Reaganism. You had all this kind of things. After 9/11, what do we get? Zero Dark 30. We have all these shows where the torture saves the day. There's a bomb going off, you have to torture someone, and at the last 5 minutes, the cops burst in there and save whoever they're gonna save. And torture becomes, you know, an accepted policing method, and that's constantly pushed on TV over and over again. You have shows like Orange is the New Black that normalize prisons, where it's kind of turned into, oh, right, they try to make some kind of deep thing and make a point, but ultimately it's a sitcom about being in prison. Remember Hogan's Heroes? That was a sitcom about being a POW in World War II, you know, right after the Holocaust. So the media itself is normalizing. You look at John Jay. John Jay is a police school. The very architecture itself out there is shaped like a prison block. And I was in prison for 5 years. I come in here and I'm all creeped out. Not only am I creeped out, you know what they have here? The Urban Initiative, which is they take the black youth and they try to encourage them to go to college, which is a good thing, but they put them in a building that looks like a prison block. So you get these mixed messages. It's the carrot and the stick. To me, that's evil, you know, because it's not about liberation. They could have put, why didn't they put the Urban Initiative in Baruch College, where they teach them to be business people? I'm a communist, so I'm really not for that, but you know, at least that kind of goes along with the theory of bourgeois ideology. Why didn't they put it in Queens College, a liberal arts school? You know, where people have a broad array of things. Here, they want you to be the social worker where they ghettoize you, put you back into where you can only deal with other ex-cons, other people. You don't deal in regular society once you get your master's degree. You're in the social system, which deals with other people. You're not dealing in astrophysics. You're not dealing in economics, foreign policy. No, you're there to be sort of the sheep herder, the sheepdog, and keep these people in line or send them back. you know. And so these things, you know, we may take a CUNY for granted, but there is definitely propaganda in the Urban Initiative. And it's kind of a shame that this leftist left forum meets in John Jay. I really object to that. It's really a disgusting, disgusting venue. You know, we used to meet in Pace, which is, you know, I mean, it's not a great school. It's a ripoff. I went there, but at least they're not telling you to go back to prison. So why I became an activist? When I was about 20, well, growing up, you know, I was raised in Queens, half Jewish, half German, so I hate myself. No, I don't. But, you know, so we're watching all these World War II movies that was alluded to, and the big thing was the Holocaust. So I was inundated with Holocaust, and it really put the message in us that we all have to do stuff. We all have to be active. We all have to care. At the end of the Holocaust movies, it always would say, never again. I took that to heart. And I never thought never again meant never only to the Jews. I thought it meant never again to anybody, because as a historian, I knew there was numerous genocides across the time scale of human, you know, anywhere from Carthage to the Native Americans, the stuff that gets mold over ad nauseum here at the Left Forum, which is rightfully so. I'm not criticizing that. I'm glad we do it. But then, 1980s, I'm 20 years old, I hear about the genocide in Guatemala, where they're killing masses of Mayan peoples in the central Guatemalan highlands. And I recently wrote a paper on it, 180,000 in a three-year period. The actual genocide started in 64. Theoretically, it ended in 1994, which is bullshit. It's still going on. So from that period, according to UN statistics, it's about 250,000 people. It's probably a lot more, but that's what they admit. And so the genocide's still going on. And I always think, you know, well, what if I was a kid in Nazi Germany and put in a concentration camp and no one cared? You know, I mean, here people are, my family's being gassed, I'm about to be gassed, and nobody cared. Well, I care. And so after 9/11, all of a sudden, this became acceptable. At least before 9/11, it wasn't acceptable to be part of a bombing of Syria and blowing stuff up. False flag operations are flying left and right. Who gassed the people in Syria? Was it the rebels? Was it Assad? We don't know. I hear both sides say it was the other one. I bet you it was the CIA. You know, Assad is heavily monitored. I'm not betting any money on it, but that's my guess. So there's this acceptance of evil.
Historian activist Paul Gilman with the Gotham Greens. At the 2017 Left Forum entitled Resistance, Gilman spoke at a panel on the normalization of evil in the current dark age. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Wednesday, June 14th, 2017. The news was produced with Matt Patterson and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.